Welcome to the Wasatch Hills Church Podcast, a ministry of the Wasatch Hills Seventh-day Adventist Church with Pastor Bernie Anderson. Our prayer is that what you hear will inspire, equip, and perhaps introduce you to a new walk with Jesus Christ.
I'm not going to be talking today about Jesus, which is my favorite thing to talk about, because he kind of laid it on me to talk about talking about Jesus. So that's what I'm going to talk about. I've grown up a Seventh-day Adventist, and I've always wanted to experience Christ and to be able to participate in his great salvation, both for myself and for sharing and watching it happen in other people. And over the years, I would try and involve myself in anything I could think of that my church would provide. And it would be, for example, it tended to be canned, programmed, or scripted. You know what I mean? I got bit by a dog once in Portland, Oregon, trying to fasten these pictures of wild beasts for a prophecy seminar on everyone's doorknob. And I found that most of the things that I was ever involved with, you know, camp meeting, Pathfinders, AYA, Festival of Faith, it was all programmed. It was put before me, was someone else's idea, and I applied myself to the best I could to pull in the harness and accomplish the task at hand. But I was looking for something more meaningful all my life. I thought, for example, well, I'm going to put steps to Christ on all my neighbor's doorsteps. So I did that. But I've got to thinking over the years that wasn't even what I was looking for, because it wasn't like I was telling them, I read this book and it meant so much to me. It was more patronizing, like, you really need to read this book. You know, and so I've been searching for that authentic and that genuine ability to let go and let God use me somehow, please. And my best friend at Walla Walla College was a theology major, and he had this picture of Jesus on the wall of his room. And he wore his hair the same way. He had brown hair and a brown beard with brown eyes. And I asked him one time, I said, are you trying to look like Jesus? And he said, yes. And I've thought about that. I was teasing him. But over the years, the answer has become more meaningful to me. Well, this is the text that I chose for today. Sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer to everyone that asks a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. And I also thought this text fit in with that. Preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and teaching. Well, I had the privilege of living in the state of Alaska for 12 years. Had a wonderful job with the U.S. federal government, U.S. Public Health Service, Indian Health Service. I lived in the town of Anchorage, which is right about there. But my job took me to all points in Alaska and meeting with all the native tribes and the native tribal leadership in health care to set up a program to support the equipment in their hospitals and clinics. And I lived in a beautiful city of Anchorage. Actually, Salt Lake reminds me of Anchorage, Alaska, because it's also a city that's nestled up against a mountain range that runs north and south. And the only difference would be is we would need an arm of the ocean running the full length of our valley, and this would be a city just like Anchorage. So you see the beauty of the water and the city and the mountains. And I had many a wonderful time in Alaska, but it also was a place where the bitter came with the sweet, and I went through the darkest time of my life personally when my wife left me and we went through a painful divorce. Well, I was going and trying to heal at a Christian divorce care program, and a man that led out in the program told me, he said, I give a Bible study every Tuesday night in a Denny's restaurant, and you ought to come. And I said, well, I probably will sometime. And I didn't think about it. But one time, I just happened to be headed home from somewhere, and I happened to be driving by a Denny's restaurant. And I thought, oh, that's the Denny's restaurant that the Bible study is in. And what do you know? It's Tuesday night, and it's the time that the Bible study is. So I whipped into the parking lot, and understand, I'd been begging the Lord. I'd been going through a hard time, and I was begging the Lord that He would give me a sign that He had not left me, and that my life, as messed up as it was, could have some meaning. And so I whipped into the Denny's restaurant, and I walked in the door, and I saw the man. He was back in that corner pocket. You know in Denny's restaurants where the cubby hole is round, and you can slide in from either side, and the table is round? He was sitting in the back corner, and beside him was a young man, not more than 16 years old, but he was dressed somewhat ferociously. It was kind of this gothic black punk. He had his head shaved, skinhead look. You know the rough look I'm talking about? Boots and stuff. And he was sitting beside this man. Well, I slid into the booth beside the man and announced who I was and that I was here for the Bible study. Well, the man told me, he said, you know, normally we do have a Bible study, but tonight we're doing something else. We're having to talk to this young man. And so I sat quietly and listened. And this man began to castigate and verbally chastise and assault this young man. He told him how bad he had been to his parents and his family, what a miserable excuse for a human being he was, how he should have gone and joined the military or done something meaningful with his life and accomplished something. And I began to feel very uncomfortable because I didn't even feel like this man was treating this teenager like a Christian should. And here I was supposed to be at a Denny's restaurant at a Bible study, and I had no clue why I was there. And so one thing that I did, I was praying, I was going, God, why am I here? Why am I listening to what I'm listening to? And finally I decided, in a show of solidarity, I would get up and go over on the other side beside this young man. So I got up, I walked around the corner table and slid into the booth beside this 16-year-old boy, and I turned to him and I said, listen, I don't know you and you don't know me, but I can tell that you have experienced pain in your life, and I want you to know I have experienced pain in my life, and that's what we have in common. And I want you to know tonight that I am here for you. And then I just be quiet and let this guy carry on. Well, he continued, and he told this boy all kinds of harsh and accusatory things. And I was praying and I was going, God, what am I doing in this Denny's restaurant? When all of the sudden, the man came to a stop. He slid out of the cubicle and he said, and now, young man, he goes, this guy is Denver Lodge and he's a Christian and he is going to tell you a story that you need to hear. And it's the story of the prodigal son. And he walked out of the Denny's restaurant. And I was in shock. And I was sitting by this kid, and I thought, well, maybe that was a cue from the Lord. I better obey. And so I began, carefully, lovingly, to tell him the story of the prodigal son. What else could I do? And I tried to tell it in the most creative and best way possible, in the most authentic and genuine and meaningful. And as I was telling him, you know how they wrap up the silverware in Denny's with a little napkin and there's a knife, fork, and spoon in there? He reached over and grabbed one of those silverware things and he pulled out the knife. And he began to scrape off the black fingernail polish from his fingers. And I told him how the boy came to the place where he didn't like his life, and he was hungry, and he remembered his family and his father, and he wished he could go home. And I told him that he did. He made the decision, and he went home, and the father was waiting for him, and the father ran to him and hugged him, and he was forgiven and accepted. And I kind of came to the end of the story, and he was about finished with one hand, and I asked him, I told him, I said, the Bible says that in 1 John 1:9, if you will confess your sins, God is faithful and he will forgive. And God still keeps his word today. And the boy, right in front of me, God, and the Denny's restaurant people, started confessing his sins. And oh, my friends, he was guilty of everything this man said and more. You see, he'd run away from his family at 14, joined the gangs, and lived under the overpasses of Anchorage. He had committed crimes. He had adopted Satanism. In fact, he was supposed to be going to the Marilyn Manson concert that night. But instead of being at the concert he was dressed up for, he was in a Denny's restaurant confessing his sins. Unbelievable. I listened, and finally he came to an end. And I said, is there any more that you'd like to say? And he goes, no, I can't think of anything else to confess. And I said, well, I just want to assure you that you have done a courageous thing tonight, and God has forgiven you. And he was just finishing his 10th fingernail with the knife when the man came in the front door of the Denny's restaurant again and was walking toward us. And he had another man with him who I did not recognize, but the boy recognized. And the boy slipped out of the booth and ran. And he hugged the man because, you see, the man that the other man had brought was his father. And I figured it was time for me to exit stage right. And I slipped out of the Denny's restaurant and walked across the sidewalk in front of the glass. And the last thing I saw that night in the Denny's restaurant was this 16-year-old boy hugging his father, tears pouring down both eyes, waving at me goodbye. And I went to the parking lot and I got in my car. And I'm telling you, friends, I repented of every good thing I'd ever tried to do for Jesus. Because when the Holy Spirit sets the situation, it is so much more effective and so much more efficient for the cause of God than anything you and I can ever contrive or program. And that's really the core of what I want to talk to you about tonight. I saw that boy only one other time during the time I lived in Alaska. And he saw me in a parking lot. He looked a little different. He had hair now. And he came running across the parking lot. I didn't quite know what was going on at first. And then I recognized him. And he hugged me. And he said, and this is all he said, "Thank you." You know, even though my personal life hit zero and darkness prevailed, my professional life in Alaska was at the apex. And what do I mean by that? The zenith of a career, in my opinion, is when what you do in your profession has the maximum impact on the maximum number of people. That's the apex of a career. And I was managing a technical group of people, and we had put forth a proposal to the U.S. Congress, and it got funded. And it was like the politicians of Alaska came back to us and said, "Don't screw up, dude. You said you could do it. Now just do it." And here we had the money, and we had put forward the idea that we could build telehealth units and network them and get them talking via satellites and link every clinic in the state of Alaska. And our first round was 125 targets. And we started building these units and burning them in and then tearing them down and palletizing them and shipping them and going on the pontoon plane or the tundra tire plane or the ski plane to the last mile of Alaska and putting them in the clinics. And you didn't have to teach an Eskimo how to use this. They had, you know, so-and-so's family's baby got born at 2 a.m. on Barter Island, and everybody rejoiced. This was before HIPAA kicked in, and everybody was talking. And they had full motion video, and they were so excited, and they were talking to doctors and talking to nurses. And when we got to our 125th clinic installed and operational, I was honored in Anchorage, and 2 weeks later I was promptly fired. I don't know what that was about, but anyway, I tell you that story only to tell you this, that 3 years later I got a call. And the call was from a professional organization in the nation of Australia. And it was the annual conference of the engineering and physical sciences in medicine. And what did they want? They wanted me to come to Australia and to tell them what we'd been able to accomplish in Alaska in networking and telehealth so that they could do that to the last mile of Australia. And they had funding and were gung-ho and ready to go. And, you know, it was wonderful, and I didn't say no. You won't blame me for that, right? But anyway, they said, you know, if you're willing to talk in other places, we'll set up even more places for you to speak, and your knowledge will benefit other people. And I'm like, yeah, I want to see more places. So the idea was I was going to fly into this city here. I would have called it Melbourne. They go Melbourne. I flew into Melbourne, went over to Geelong, and then they were going to, that was where the big convention was for EPSM, and then they were going to fly me over to Sydney. They asked if there was anything I wanted to see. I said, I want to go to Avondale College. Where's that? Well, I don't know, but it turned out it was near this Newcastle out of Sydney, and they said, no problem, we can work that in. And then they wanted me to go up to what I would have called Brisbane, but they call it Brisbane. So I set out on this marvelous adventure with my PowerPoints, and it was great. I flew into the beautiful city of Melbourne, Victoria. And I was picked up by a chauffeur in a limousine and whisked off to Geelong and put in this bed and breakfast. And I'm telling you, I've never been treated like I was treated in this bed and breakfast. You know, young people in Australia, they tell me, don't really get married anymore because their parents tried that and it all ended in a divorce. So they just live together and they call each other mate. And so this boy and this girl were running this bed and breakfast, and the girl would cook the food, and the boy, in a tuxedo, would serve. And I mean, in British style, you know, and elegance. And I'd never been treated. It was like, yes, and Mr. Lodge, what would you like for breakfast? And when would you like that? And I would make an appointment, you see. And it was up to me to be on time, and it was up to him to serve. And I'm telling you, I could go on and on with the things that I had for breakfast, you know, like oatmeal and cream, or yogurt and granola, or French toast, or pancakes, or omelets, you name it. If I could think of it, it was there. And I was thinking as this guy was serving me one day, you know what? I've always been taught that if you want to be great in God's kingdom, you become the servant of all. And I began to ponder that as this guy served me. And it was started half jokingly, but I was half serious, and he knew it. I told him, I said, you know, there's a kingdom coming. And in that kingdom, we're told in the Bible that everyone who serves now is going to be really great then. And I said, I have a feeling you're going to be really up there in the kingdom to come. And I just wanted to ask you a favor. Could you put in a good word for me with the man upstairs? And he thought that was great fun, and we began a dialogue. And he told me, he said, I'll put in a good word for you with the man upstairs. So I was glad. But anyway, I heard from him about a year later. He emailed me. He said, you know, my mate and I, we had these visitors, and they were so incredibly rude to us. We've never been more mistreated. And we're actually having second thoughts that we should even be in the business we're in. Could you write me and tell me once again about the kingdom to come? And about how if you serve, you'll be great. And I'm telling you, folks, it was with great care and great prayer that I crafted that return email. And I made the case as best as I could using the scriptures that people that serve are going to be great. And later on, I called the pastor in Geelong, Victoria, and I asked him, could you please go visit this couple and give them a Bible and tell them it was from me? And he said he would. And so I rejoice at that spiritual encounter, that divine appointment. Well, I can't go into it. Words would fail me to describe the flora and the fauna, the wildlife, God's creation in the nation of Australia. You're just going to have to check it out. But I'm telling you, it would be as if I asked you, try and describe the United States from sea to shining sea in a few words. I'm telling you, words would fail the beauties that God has given to us. And I got to see all of these animals. I got within 2 feet of the biggest kangaroos. I went in the wild up climbing in these eucalyptus trees, and I actually got to pet a big male koala bear. He didn't like it very much, but he was warm and fuzzy, just like the ones in the store, only warm, you know? He was alive. And I also got to see the duckbill platypus. You know, they tell me that some Australians live and die in Australia, never see a duckbill platypus, and I got to see four of them. it was amazing because someone taught me how to see them, how exactly when to go and what to look for, and I got to see that. And so I can just tell you that words fail me in the beauty and the wonder of God's creation in the nation of Australia. I went to the capital city in New South Wales, Sydney. It's a clean city. I would call Salt Lake the cleanest U.S. city I've ever lived in. And it's kind of like a good, clean city. It's big. And they have this wonderful opera house by the water. And it has the most astounding acoustics. It's just fantastic. And it's a beautiful city. And they took me to this place, the largest space telescope in the world. They used this space telescope to track the TV transmission for when the astronauts landed on the moon. And this radio telescope is aimed at space and sees all kinds of radiation spectra that you can't see with your eye. And two movies have been made about it titled The Dish, because it's the largest dish in the world. And the CSIRO, it was this guild of scientists, and I made a technical presentation on telehealth, telemedicine, and networking, and I realized as I was talking to these people, I was addressing the smartest minds in the nation of Australia, and it was an awesome thing. After that, I went to the Adventist Institution. There's this huge medical center, 10 stories high, in Sydney. And everybody in Sydney knows that it's a Seventh-day Adventist institution. And they're proud of it. They speak of it. It's affectionately called the SAN. And it's run by the Seventh-day Adventists. And so I got to make a technical presentation to the doctors and nurses and administrators at that hospital. And that was such a privilege. And I got to go to Avondale College. We saw pictures last weekend of it. And the people were so incredibly friendly, and I got to make a technical presentation, and I got to make a presentation to the theology department professors about my study, trying to get to know Jesus. And it was just absolutely a wonderful experience to meet with these kids and these people. And I would tell you, if you ever get a chance to go to Australia, go to Avondale and see. There, this house right here is where Ellen White lived the whole time she was in Australia, and she was the reason why they bought the land, because it was undervalued and thought to be bad land, but she told them, instructed them, if you get this land, it's a good deal, and they did, and it has been a wonderful educational benefit to people in Australia. Well, I flew on to Brisbane, Queensland, and I made my seventh presentation on a Friday afternoon to about 45 engineers and scientists. And I was so exhausted. All I wanted to do was to slide my legs into the cool white sheets of my hotel bed as the sun set and the Sabbath began. But it wasn't to be. When I finished my presentation, a tall, dark man walked forward to me and he said, "I am going to take you out to eat tonight." And I was sitting there going, "What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do?" And then the thought occurred to me, Jesus would go out and eat with this guy. Oh, I said, thinking it would derail the whole situation, I said, "But I'm a vegetarian, and so it'd be hard to find a place." But his eyes lit up, and he said to me, he goes, "I'm a vegetarian too. And I'm going to take you to the finest vegetarian restaurant in Brisbane, Queensland." And he did. And he sat me in the corner and he said, "I want you to just sit here, relax. And I'm going to bring you vegetarian things." And he must have brought me a dozen different things and set them before me. "Did you like that one? Oh, you're going to really like this one." And I didn't know that you could make this many things that were vegetarian, let alone you could buy them from a restaurant. And he began to talk about his life. And he told me that his father died before he ever got a chance to get to know his father. And he began to speak of his beliefs. And he began to open up, and I was shocked. I was just sitting, eating, listening, And trying to ask questions that would prove to him I was actually listening to what he was saying. And he talked and talked, and I ate and ate until I was really full. And then we went on a walk. And his name, I can tell you, was Mohan. And I want you to all remember this name, Mohan, because I want you to pray for Mohan, and I'll tell you why. So anyway, Mohan, he walked me through the streets of Brisbane. And he walked me through where there was all these artists and all these painters. And then he walked me through where all these music and all these loud music and every kind of imaginable sound the human ear could hear. And he walked me to places where you can drink bad things. And he walked me to places where you can do bad things. And he watched me every move that I made. And apparently, after a long, long walk, I had passed the test, whatever that was. And he said, "I have decided that I would like you to see where I live." I said, "Well, that's great." And so he took me up in one of these high-rise penthouse type. We went to the 27th floor, and I always remember it was like a round building by the river. There were river ferries with lights and all this. And he went up, and his apartment was shaped like a piece of pie, the door, and then it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And he had a balcony out there, and you could look out and see the little teeny tiny boats floating on the river that went to the ocean, and all of the splendor of the city of Brisbane was there before us. And then he took me and he started to show me pictures. And he showed me pictures of his mother. And he told me the story of how she died. And that he was 9 years old at her bedside. And she said, "I want you to make me a promise. Promise me that you will go the highest you can go in education in this world." And he said, "I stood at my mother's bedside, and I swore to her that I would go the highest achievement that can be achieved in the education system." And he said, "And I have. I've kept my promise to my mother." And the next thing, he took me in a room, and he showed me his gods. Because you see, Mohan was a Hindu. Now, you guys, I have to admit, I have never in my life before that moment been around a Hindu. And all I could think of was in Sabbath school, they say, "Oh, the little Hindu, they don't know about Jesus." So, you know, the only thing my church prepared me for this moment was I knew this guy was a Hindu, and I knew he didn't know about Jesus. That was it. And he began to tell me about his gods. And he had a god to make himself prosperous. And he had a god to bring him love. And he had a god to get revenge on his enemies. And he had a god to overcome obstacles in life and not to give his gods any glory. I tried my best to listen and to understand. And then he came to the point where he wanted to tell me about how he fulfilled his mother's request and how he got a bachelor's degree in the United States and a master's degree. And he got a PhD in biomedical engineering, specializing in cardiology, cardiac output, stroke volume, contractility. He knew everything. He handed me his dissertation. It was 3 inches thick. And I began to leaf through this awesome document. And he told me how hard it was to defend his thesis. And I began to realize as I was listening to this guy, he had shared with me some pretty intimate things. And we'd been together probably 3 hours now. It was probably 11 o'clock at night. And he was building up to something, because clearly everything that he was talking about to me hadn't satisfied. It wasn't enough. And here he was, a PhD scientist working for the nation of Queensland. He had started with Hewlett-Packard. He'd gone to Philips Multinational Global Corporation. And then he'd been hired by the state of Queensland to get their cardiology program on the right track. He had his own laboratory. He had cardiologists working with him. And he was in charge. Well, he wasn't happy. And he said, and I was just going, God, what am I doing here? What am I going to say? I hope I don't have to talk, you know? And he had done most of the talking, nonstop. And yet I realized he had shared these intimacies with me. So there must be some kind of trust there. And then all of a sudden, the question came. And he said this. And I'll remember it till the day I die. These words, they're burned into my brain. He said, and so you see, I am searching for the truth. And talk about a segue. Whoa! And so I was like, God, give me something to say. Because he fell silent and he watched me. And the Lord gave me something really quick to say. And I said, well, I've got news for you. Good news, Mohan. The Bible says those who seek will find. And I have every belief that your search will be rewarded and you will find truth. And I said, and when you find it, it will be not so much a precept or a philosophy, but it will be a person. And the name of that person is Jesus Christ. And his eyes got big. And I wondered if I'd slipped up already. Screwed it up. Don't screw it up. Okay, so I'm praying. I'm praying and I'm wondering. And he said to me, you must tell me of this Jesus. And I was like, oh no, here we go. And I said, first, let's just go out on the balcony and talk about worldviews. And so we went out there, and with the beauty of the city, we began to talk about worldviews. I said, listen, Mohan, I said, I'm willing to talk, all right? I'm willing. But I said, I don't want you to think that I'm putting you down. It's just that you were born on one side of the world, and you were taught certain things. And you hold them to be the case, and you can answer just about any question within the context of your worldview. And you've explained it quite eloquently for the past 3 hours. But I said, I was born on the other side of the world, and my mommy and daddy taught me different things. And I don't believe like you believe. And I just want you to know that I'm not trying to put you down, but if you want me to talk, I could say things that conflict with what you believe, and you've told me tonight, because that's not how I believe. And he said, you must tell me of this Jesus. And so, with his permission, I began. And he led me over to his DVD and stereo system, very expensive audio system. And he said, listen, he said, I need you to know. He said, I saw a movie recently, and it was called The Passion of the Christ. And I thought, could it be? You must tell me of this Jesus. And so, with trepidation, I began as carefully and as prayerfully as I could to tell him that God sent his Son. And he was a baby, and he grew to be a builder and a carpenter, and he was nice to people, and he healed them of their diseases, and he cast out their demons, and he taught of his Father and a better day. You see, I said, he was killed, he was murdered cruelly, and he was innocent of that, but he didn't stay dead. And he came back to life. And see, my worldview is different. You think good and bad are eternally co-equal, like two sides of a coin. But I think there was good, you see. And then there was bad. And someday, there's going to be good again. Just good. And you believe there are many gods, and I believe there are one God and his Son, Jesus, that came. And when he rose from the dead, he ascended into heaven, but not without making a promise that he would come again and take us home. And you know, Mohan listened. And he said to me, he said, you must not walk home alone in this city. I will walk with you to your hotel. And so we did. And there I was able to show him some of the work I'd done at trying to get to know Jesus and some of the scriptures and the promises we have. And you know what? He didn't leave my room till 2 in the morning. And his eyes were big and his face was happy. And his question was, could it be? And you know, it wasn't just 6 to 8 weeks ago that I was in a place called Salt Lake City. And I was working with a children's program called Vacation Bible School. And I was assigned to a pod of 6 little kids. And I was casually talking to them on a Tuesday night, and I mentioned the word Jesus. And this girl, right here, this little girl looked up at me, and she said, with all credibility, "Who's Jesus?" And then I realized, God was saying to me, "I've given you access to my precious pearls, the resources of my kingdom. Don't blow it. Don't make me look bad." I had 3 nights, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. That's all I had. I may never see this girl again, but I needed to talk about Jesus. And I showed her a Bible. She said she'd not seen a Bible in her life before. And I opened it and I read to her that Jesus loved her. And I'm telling you, this happened in Salt Lake City. Zion, the city of the king. There's still people that never heard of Jesus. And I'm telling you, folks, it's showtime. And we don't have an excuse. Just let go and make yourself available. And God will give you spiritual moments, supernatural encounters, and divine appointments where you can share Jesus. And that brings us back to our text. Sanctify the Lord in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason for the hope that is within you with meekness and fear.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Wasatch Hills Church Podcast. For information about the Wasatch Hills Church, please visit us on the internet at www.wasatchhills.org, or you may email Pastor Bernie Anderson at pastor@wasatchhills.org.